Media recognition from Bloomberg, Reuters, recycling trade publications. Patented process for 100% recovery of critical metals, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, aluminum. American Manganese is focused on recycling lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles. American Manganese trades on the TSX Venture, AMY, the U.S., AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit AmericanManganeseInc.com or phone me, Larry Ray, at 778-574-4444.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Ted Dixon, CEO and co-founder of InkResearch.ca, Canada's first online financial news and research service, providing insider news and knowledge to investors. His website, CanadianInsider.com, home of the Canadian Insider Club. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Ted.
Jim, it's a pleasure to be back, and thanks for everybody listening in.
One of the things you wanted to chat about today are the top 20 miners, I guess the best prospects, who's most profitable. What makes you a top 20 miner, and maybe give us a hint about who they might be?
Well, every month we put out the Ink Edge Top 20 Mining and Crypto Report, and some good news for everyone listening, that you can actually find a free copy of this in the VivaVille Discord. That's a Discord channel that we've launched, and hopefully will become community-based over time. But you can get an invite, free invite, to the Discord channel on my Twitter feed at Ted Dixon, or on the Ink Research sign-up page, or the Ink Research Twitter feed at Ink Research, and go into the Discord channel and check out the Ink Research University channel, and you dig into some of my posts there, you'll find a copy of the report. And we're actually posting quite a few of our premium research reports into that Discord channel now. So there's a good opportunity, if you're not a paying member of our community, you can become, a contributor to our community just by signing up, helping to build our membership base in our Discord channel, and get your hands on some Ink Research research for free. So head off there to the, and you can grab the top 20 mining and crypto report for April. And what we've seen is a number of gold miners have made the list. We always have some gold miners in there, but this time, they are making their mark, and it got us wondering why gold miners may be kind of creeping up our rankings. And to get to the list, you have to rank highly on the basis of company valuations, company insider commitment, and whether company insiders are buying, holding their shares, and some price momentum. So those are all quantitative risk factors. We don't sit around and pick them in a meeting. Well, we let the computer do the picking, and then we try and make sense of what's percolating to the top. And seeing some precious metals stocks hitting near the top has us wondering why insiders are upbeat about gold, precious metal stocks. Maybe we can think of a few reasons. Of course, there's always the hedge role that gold and silver stocks can play in your portfolio, but sometimes those risks are higher than others. We've been talking about this for some time. And the fact of the matter is that really, actually, if you pick your endpoint, which would be the last time the Fed overdid it in the market with tightening, gold stocks, as measured by the S&P TSX Composite Gold Index, have outperformed the S&P 500, and rather significantly. And, that's an endpoint specific point that's looking at October 2018, but that's when the two-year yield started to roll over. I think it peaked in November. Guess what? The two-year yield is back there, back to where we were on rollover month, November kind of 2018. And that's when gold stocks really started to pick up. And so we don't know if we're at the peak Fed hawkishness yet. I think maybe there's some people who have crystal ball that are able to determine whether we've gotten to the point where the Fed has manipulated rates enough through their jawboning that we're at the peak. I've been seeing a lot on both on our Ink Ultra Money platform, which includes Real Vision episodes that have a number of industry macro experts come in and talk about it, the direction of the Fed. And I'm hearing a lot that the Fed is kind of nearly done with its hawkish rhetoric. We will see. There's a really good interview that's free on our crypto feed, our YouTube feed on KN Insider from Teddy Valley, who doesn't do a lot of interviews, but he's really good. And he is thinking that the Fed is going to have to pull back. We will see. I'm kind of agnostic. Not, I don't say agnostic, because it's really important, but I don't really have a view on whether interest rates, in terms of the bond market, clearly they're going to go up on the short end. Clearly the Fed is going to raise rates 50 basis points at least in the next meeting. How much more they do, I don't know. And does the 10-year yield go much higher? I don't know. But let's just say we are at peak Fed hawkishness. Let's say that people like Teddy Valley are right. And although he doesn't come out, I've only listened to, actually got through half the interview before I had to get ready for this one, but he doesn't appear to be signaling that it's a sure thing the Fed is going to pull back soon. He just thinks that if they don't, it's going to be a disaster. I'm paraphrasing. I don't think he uses that word, but not pretty. Let's put it that way. So we really have to see, you know, how much further the Fed needs to go here, or feel it has to go here. Because let's face it, Jim, we are playing in the stock market. You're playing in a house that's being rearranged by central planners on a daily basis. That's the fact of the matter. There is no free market. There is no free uncontrolled market. It's a manipulated market. It's a matter of how much and how much control the central banks, central planners have in these markets. And, you know, we didn't have to go very far in the news cycle back to see a great example of this, which was last night, when the central bank governor of Japan, reiterated their commitment to maintaining 10-year yields at 25 basis points. And how will the central bank pull off this magic? They will apparently buy 10-year bonds every single day, every business day, you know, if there's demand for it, and they will do it just to try and keep these yields at 25 basis points. So we will see how that works out, but certainly, Hirohiko Kuroda, who is the central bank governor there, believes that they have the ability to do that. And one would think that he is probably not a lone wolf in this strategy. But the Bank of Japan, I want to say, is like kind of a, you know, it's certainly not a branch plan of the Fed, but you know, it's a G5 central bank. Actually, you know, a G3, you know, in terms of, you know, the ECB, the Fed, and the Bank of Japan. I don't know, but I'm assuming that, you know, that he's doing this and the Fed is okay with it. And the U.S. Treasury is kind of okay with it. And so you've got this central planning going on in the bond market by the Bank of Japan. While you've got the Fed trying to play this, you know, unravel some of its balance sheet. So we'll see how that game works out. And we don't know. And that's where we come back to gold. Okay, so we've got this central planning going on to try and keep lids on bond yields out of Japan. If that is part of a grand central planning scheme to kind of keep the lid on long-term bond yields, then, you know, it kind of takes away that whole argument that, oh, well, you can't buy gold because it doesn't have a dividend, it doesn't pay an interest rate, and, you know, you can get better interest rates elsewhere. Well, if we've seen a peak in long-term bond yields, I'm not saying we have, I'm just saying it's one of the scenarios, it bolsters the case for gold. And what would be more important is if the Fed basically signals at some point they're done with this, these rate hikes. But gold started to outperform in 2018 before the Fed pivoted. They sniffed it out ahead of time. So basically at some point, investors will sniff out the Fed is going to be done. Are we there yet? I don't know. But when we do get there, gold is probably going to, and gold shares are probably going to have another good run. So it is frustrating, I know, for gold investors who are, waiting for another big rally. But, you know, gold is actually, I kind of characterize it as the adult in the room, right? It doesn't, has good days and bad days, dad, has a bad day at the office once in a while, and gold does too. But, it's not behaving like even a mega tech stock. It's not falling 20% in one day on bad earnings. They're going, ricketing up 15% when, on a good day. So it's behaving, I think, as it basically should. It's playing its role as a hedge. And I think that there's a very, it will fulfill that role again, I think, very vigorously. The question is timing. And are we there in the next few weeks? Are we there in the next few months? We have to wait a year or so. I don't know. But all I do recognize is that there's this really big chatter in the market that inflation's peaking. The Fed, can kind of pull back on the gas. I'm hearing that a lot. And when I hear that a lot, it makes me think that, there is another scenario, and that is, maybe inflation does, peak at 8%, but what if it only comes down to 5%? Where does that leave us? And, we will see. So I don't know what's going to happen here in terms of inflation, whether it's peaked or whether it's going to keep going. There's so many factors involved now, war, Fed policy error. We will have to see. I think one has to be humble in terms of how far one can see. What I do have high confidence in is that there are some very potentially big outcomes one way or the other, for the asset markets. And you can easily construct the scenario where there's an elevator down, but you could also construct a scenario where there's an elevator up. So I think one has to be cognizant that there could be different outcomes, and you could have both elevator up and elevator down in the same quarter, depending on how events fold. So volatility, I think, is we're in the bull market of volatility. Look, Jim, on Thursday we saw oil rocket up $5 just on that one headline out of Europe. That Germany was now kind of on side with, doing an oil embargo. Well, that didn't take one at the time the news came out. It didn't remove one barrel of oil off the market. But, the speculators had to cover their shorts, and other speculators went long, and that's the kind of market we're in. So, we try and stay grounded on our core investment themes and what insiders are telling us by their actions, where they're putting their money. And basically, gold insiders are, stock insiders still upbeat. Energy insiders, given the massive rally we've had in energy shares, I would expect Canadian energy insiders to be taking money off the table left, right, and center. We're seeing, profit taking that is below my expectations. So, we're all primed for a pullback in oil and gas stocks. They've had a good run, we don't see insiders in Canada heading for the exits. It's a little different in the United States. You have a different policy environment there. And just looking at the Canadian market, what the insiders are doing, I would view any energy pullback as, time, an opportunity to reload, depending, on what the circumstances are. So, on those two sort of key resource areas, the basic materials and the energy, We're still in Canada fairly upbeat, cognizant of they've had good runs. There's going to have to be pullbacks, but I don't think we're out of this inflationary woods yet. That's just not the sense I get. I think, you know, we've got a war going on. I don't know how many of these macroeconomists that come on these shows and go on CNBC and all these other, like, how many of them have built into their models war? Like, how many have a model that goes, oh, well, yeah, and by the way, you know, we can program, you know, the probability of Russia going back to negotiations, that will do this and that. Like, I don't believe anybody's done that. I don't believe there's any algo in the world that does that. There may be some that claim they have this fantastic artificial intelligence that can predict all that, you know, and good luck to them if they think they have that, and maybe they do. But I don't think it's pervasive, and, you know, I just think there's way too much uncertainty. But that comes back to gold, you know. Why not have some? You know, maybe it'll sit there. Maybe it'll go down. But, you know, I mean, maybe some of these, you know, not so wonderful scenarios unfold, and gold will outperform. And like I said, it's been outperforming actually since the Fed did its last major policy mistake, 2018. They're in the middle of a policy error right now. It's already happened. It's happened because they waited too long. They were doing the team transitory thing last year. We're in the middle of a Fed policy error. It's like live time. So now is not the time to get frustrated with gold and gold stocks. Now is the time to be going through the gold stocks and seeing who's got the good management teams and who's got the lousy management teams, and get rid of the ones that got the lousy management teams. That's what I think one should be doing with gold miners continuously. And certainly now you want to have the ones with the good teams and the good projects, and you want to have a handful of them, because diversification is certainly your friend in the mining area.
We'll have more with Ted Dixon right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're chatting with Ted Dixon. Ted, the cryptocurrency world for so many people is baffling. For you, is it crystal clear?
Well, I wish it were crystal clear, but it certainly isn't. But we have a few metrics that, you know, we're watching, because we're building on the Solana blockchain very slowly. It's not our, you know, we're not out gangbusters, but we're using that blockchain to build out some new capabilities. And as far as, you know, our take on crypto, you know, it's all about adoption. It's all about, will people use it? Yes, I know Michael Lewis is out, the Liar's Poker author, is out with a book on crypto apparently. I just read a review on it. I haven't read the book. But, you know, he talks about, will people have faith in crypto as a matter of faith and something like that. Well, yeah, sure. You know, will people view Bitcoin as a store of value? That is a fair question. But that's not the only question. The question is, will there be use cases, practical use cases for cryptocurrencies? I mean, that's really, that's what it comes down to for us. And because we're trying to do just that. And so we're keeping a close eye on the Solana blockchain, especially, you know, sometimes it's up, sometimes it goes down, sometimes it has technical problems. But, you know, these are the kind of growing pain problems that I don't want to say you want to have, but they come with the territory. And what we've noticed, there's a company called Chain Crunch. Well, it's a website. I don't want to call it a company. Chaincrunch.cc that does provide some very useful metrics about the Solana blockchain. And they look at the number of unique fee payers. So the unique users every day who actually pay a fee to use the blockchain. Okay, they look at the actual account, a unique account, and it's just hit a new high basically this week. And so what that tells me is that there's still adoption activity going on the network. And it did bottom a little bit, sort of in this late winter here, really was a crypto winter. Are we out of the crypto winter? I don't know. Certainly we're out of, I would say, a recession in terms of activity on the Solana blockchain. I know there's other blockchains that there's still a lot of activity going on. Ethereum is, you know, the big, doing a big move from proof of work to proof of stake. So there's plenty of activity going on, but it all comes down to adoption. And there's so many different blockchains, so many different things going on. We can't possibly keep our eyes on all of them. But certainly on the Solana, in terms of the technology, there appears to be some adoption going on. You know, and I think, you know, NFTs are part of that, but they're also working on, developers are working on payments. So there's a lot going on. And, you know, I don't know what blockchain this relates to, but I was listening to this radio show. It's called State of Trance. Armin van Buuren. Some of, you know, he was playing music when I was a lot younger, and he's still every week he does his radio show that does trance music. Okay, well, he played a song today, Thursday. Obi Fernandez, it was the artist, I believe, who's released the song as an NFT. Well, there is a practical use case for crypto, okay? Like, a year ago, you know, NFTs were just kind of catching fire with the artwork, with the apes and all that. It was a bit of, you know, hype around it. But, you know, will there be practical use cases? Well, the music artists, I don't call the industry, because I doubt that the industry is embracing the status quo industry is embracing NFTs, just as, you know, some corners of the financial sector are not embracing crypto. You know, the artists are finding ways to use NFTs. That's an adoption. So I don't know. With the Fed in this streaming policy error, lifetime policy error, it's not going to help crypto anytime soon. You know, we don't have the environment where anybody with their junky little project that can slap on a YouTube video and find an influencer or two to promote it is going to be able to, you know, 10 to 100 times their coin. That's a good thing. That's a really good thing that behavior is no longer supported by the central bank, policy. So, that's positive. But, you know, in terms of, could we have another leg lower in these cryptos and Solana and Bitcoin? Sure, we could. You know, I don't know. I am encouraged that there does appear to be a continued adoption, continued building on these blockchains. And, you know, so as we work through this very bad, I would say, financial environment right now for financial assets, as these central planners deal with their mistakes of the past year, and I do want to cut them some slack. I mean, clearly coming out of COVID, there had to be some policy response, however, they did make a mistake in waiting too long, and they did make the mistake of believing it's transitory, and they did make massive pre-COVID mistakes by, you know, with their interventionist policies. So I do cut them some slack for their response to COVID, and governments responded in the best way. They gave it their best shot, and in some cases I think maybe they overdid it, but look, that's all hindsight. The fact of the matter is, we have to invest with the cards we are dealt, and we've been dealt a group of central planners that are way behind the curve, and now they're kind of in panic mode to get back to the curve, and that is going to make it very tough for investing. It's going to make it very tough, you know, it's going to make it very tough for cryptocurrencies and other assets to gain financial traction from institutions. But, you know, look, how many gold investors out there, you know, are thrilled that there is a so-called institutional adoption in the CME gold futures market. Like that is like not what gold and gold stock investing is what we're interested in looking at. We're looking at, the use cases for gold and gold stocks as how do you, diversify your wealth and protect your wealth, from these central planning policy errors. And, you know, it's the same with crypto, is how do we use it to make the financial offerings for people better in a system that is not beholden to, in Canada, one person who sets the interest rate, and that is the central bank governor, one person. Yes, they have a committee, yes, they have a staff, blah, 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 but the fact of the matter is, under the rules, there is one person who sets the interest rate. Well, you know, that's been great if you've been a housing speculator. It's not so great, I would suggest, if you're one of the new immigrants coming to Canada who's going to be looking for a home to buy, because, you know, as a new home buyer, you're being, you know, you're being, let's just say, set up in a housing market that's very precarious, I would say. You know, others may disagree with me. That's fine. I'm not a housing expert, and I'm happy to defer to the housing experts that you have on House Street as to where we stand in the housing market. Just, I don't think it's a great policy to be bringing new Canadians into a housing market that's overheated, that's very expensive. You know, that's, again, that's all about bad policy, bad planning, leaving it to too many people who don't have a lot of accountability, you know, and anyway, that's another accountability rabbit hole we could go down. But, the fact of the matter is, you know, if you're a new Canadian coming to Canada, you're gonna have a whale of a time, finding a place to live. And, you know, is that really right to be, you know, providing that kind of a welcoming to new Canadians? I have some issues with that. And, anyway, that's probably a discussion for another day. But, yeah, I mean, that's just all part of these kind of compounded policy mistakes, that we see on the monetary front. And I'd say in Canada, we've probably seen a policy mistake on the fiscal front with, you know, in terms of, on the immigration side, in terms of bringing in so many newcomers that into a housing market that is just not ready for them. You know, it's just not hospitable. So it's maybe things will cool down and we'll all work through it and we'll all get through it. But we certainly are in interesting times with you know, how central banks have overeased, how fiscal authorities have been very generous, and in Canada we have this question mark about the housing market, which I will be very interested to follow as I listen to House Street in the months ahead, as I know you guys track the housing market very closely. So that'll be one to listen to for sure.
Thank you so much, Ted, for being on the show.
Well, thanks for having me back, Jim.
My guest has been Ted Dixon, CEO and co-founder of InkResearch.ca, his website, CanadianInsider.com. If you have any questions for Ted or any of our other guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com, our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter at House Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.